Fundamental Resonance, Episode 3. Deep Listening. Submarine Surveillance, the SOFAR Channel, and the Sanctuary Sound Program. The story of how a secret military surveillance system evolved into a scientific tool. Our ocean is one of the least explored and understood environments on our planet. Solar-powered telescopes travel galaxies, beaming back discovery after discovery in near real time, detecting energies that have inhabited the universe since its inception and creating cartographies of stars long gone, all while 95% of the ocean remains unexplored. Below the surface zone that defines most human activity, the ocean is a place of total darkness, frigid temperatures, and immense pressure. Inhospitable, to say the least. Which may be why the ocean can continue to surprise us. One of these surprises happened at the beginning of the 20th century. U.S. naval oceanographers studying sound transmission in the ocean were exploding bombs at varying depths in one place and listening for them underwater in others. They noticed that at certain depths, sound waves had the ability to propagate extremely long distances without losing much energy. Sounds generated hundreds or even thousands of miles away were being detected at the same depth with surprising clarity. This discovery led to the identification of a deep sea channel, a horizontal layer of water centered at roughly 3,000 feet below the ocean's surface. This channel was dubbed the SOFAR channel, short for sound fixing and ranging. So what is it that makes this particular part of the ocean a sort of highway for sound? It's a two-part answer. The first part has to do with pressure and temperature. The SOFAR channel is the location within the ocean's depths where the forces of temperature and pressure are in equilibrium with regard to their effects on sound. Sound waves move faster in the depths above the SOFAR channel because the water there is warmer and sound waves travel faster in warmer water. Sound waves also move faster in the depths below the SOFAR channel because the pressure there is greater and sound waves travel faster when pressure increases. So the effect of cooling, which slows sound down, and increasing pressure, which speeds sound up, balance each other out in creating an area of the ocean where sound travels slower than it would in the water above or below it. The second part of the answer is refraction. Normally, sound waves spread out in all directions, losing their energy or volume as they travel from their source. But sound waves can also refract like light waves do. When a sound wave enters the SOFAR channel, instead of continuing in the direction it was going when it entered, part of the wave slows down, either due to a decrease in temperature or an increase in pressure. And that slowing causes at least part of the wave to bend and turn back into the channel. Most sound waves that enter the SOFAR channel do continue on their journey toward the ocean surface or the ocean floor. Sound that enters the SOFAR channel at a flat enough angle, however, is bounced back and forth between the upper and lower reaches of the channel and propagated horizontally at that depth. Because the energy of the sound wave is being directed by the channel rather than traveling out in every direction as it normally would, the energy of the wave is conserved and it can travel much farther than it could in other parts of the ocean. So, we have a horizontal layer of water centered at around 3,000 feet below the surface, stretching throughout the entire ocean where sound waves are able to travel thousands of miles with no dissipation of energy. The Navy was very interested. In the 1950s, at the beginning of the Cold War, the United States Navy was struggling with a new mandate. Submarine action against ocean-going vessels had been a significant force in World War II, and the Navy needed surveillance technology that would be able to locate, identify, and track Soviet submarines. The Navy did not solve this problem with cutting-edge technology. The most ambitious and effective American defense project to come out of the Cold War was built with equipment already in use by the phone company. It was a more sophisticated understanding of the ocean itself, namely the discovery of the SOFAR channel and its unique acoustic properties, that allowed relatively simple equipment to be used in the creation of a global ocean surveillance network. AT&T was contracted to provide the equipment, which was constructed mostly from parts already in use in the telephone network. The Navy placed an array of hydrophones fixed to the seafloor within the range of the SOFAR channel. These hydrophones were connected by some 10,000 miles of undersea cable to onshore facilities, where the audio information collected from the SOFAR could be interpreted and analyzed. This network was called the Sound Surveillance System, or SOSIS. The technicians who worked at these onshore SOSIS locations did not listen for information. The audio detected by the undersea microphones was visualized for technicians using spectrograms, graphical representations of a sound signal's frequencies plotted over time. Analysts would carefully examine these spectrograms for distinctive visual patterns or signatures, each associated with different types of submarines. The location of a submarine could then be mapped using sound. The difference in arrival time of a particular signal at each of the different hydrophone locations could be used to triangulate the origin of that signal, and by extension, the location of that Soviet submarine. The sound surveillance system had been a success, but its success had been dependent upon it remaining a secret. And with the cooling of the Cold War and the arrival of whisper-quiet nuclear-powered submarines, there was not much military need for SOSIS anymore. The project was officially declassified in 1991, at which point oceanographers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, were granted access to this vast underwater hydrophone array. The results were incontrovertible. The hydrophone was an indispensable tool to oceanographic research. The resulting studies of the underwater vibrations captured by this former tool of military surveillance have shed light upon events that occur where no light can pass. The same hydrophones used to detect submarines have captured vibrations produced by the vocalization of whales, the movements of tectonic plates, undersea volcanic eruptions, and even the sounds of deep sea currents. Hydrophone arrays are now commonly used as advanced warning systems for earthquakes, volcanoes, and tsunamis. The Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty Organization, the group tasked with administering the worldwide ban on nuclear testing, has even deployed its own hydrophone network, which monitors the SOFAR channel for the acoustic signature of nuclear explosions. Hydrophone arrays are also now a common tool used to monitor the health of endangered marine populations, as well as assess the effects of anthropogenic sound pollution upon those populations. By co-opting the focus of observation, a network used to reinforce mechanisms of military power and control has become a tool to explore aspects of ecology and geology previously obscured above and below the sea. In the minutes that follow, you will hear the calls of the gray whale, the humpback whale, and the fin whale, the clicks of boccaccio and damselfish, and the anthropogenic sound of sonar, boat engines, navigational buoys, and poaching. sound collage that accompanies this piece was sourced from the Sanctuary Soundscape Monitoring Program, a collaboration of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the U.S. Navy. Over 300 terabytes of data has been made available through this project, much of it in the form of raw audio, and all in the public domain. The Sanctuary Soundscape website is available at sanctsound.ioos.us. Access to the raw audio data is available through the National Centers for Environmental Information at ncei.noaa.gov. Fundamental Resonance is a production of Fulcrum Arts. Composed, written, narrated, and edited by Sam Rowell. Audio mastering provided by Sean McCann.